This episode is brought to you by our sponsors and by listeners like you on Patreon. Bombas' vision is simple. Make the most comfortable clothes ever and match every item sold with an equal item donated. So when you buy Bombas, you are also giving to someone in need. Bombas has designed their socks, shirts, and underwear to be the clothes you can't wait to put on every day. The Webb family over here has used them, and we love them. They're comfy, fun-looking, and come in family packs, which is awesome. I've never seen that before. I use my Bombas socks when I go on runs, and they're extremely comfortable. Everything they make is soft, seamless, tagless, and has a cozy feel. And the Bombas t-shirts are made with thoughtful design features like invisible seams, soft fabrics, and perfect waist so they hang just right. And did you know that socks, underwear, and t-shirts are the three most requested clothing items at homeless shelters? That's why Bombas donates one for every item you buy. So far, Bombas customers like you have helped donate over 50 million items of essential clothing. Go to bombas.com/purplerocket and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/purplerocket for 20% off. bombas.com/purplerocket. Parents, school's out, summer's here, and the kids are back at home with a lot of free time. Go wild with Wonder this summer without school. Enroll in a fun, flexible learning experience with over 140,000 online classes and camps for every kid with any interest. Look, as a fellow parent, I get the pressure of finding something engaging and useful for our kids to do over the summer break. OutSchool can help keep them engaged and their minds stimulated and their imaginations firing. They offer every kind of class you can imagine, from entrepreneurship to freestyle dancing to art, even magic lessons. There's something for kids of all ages, grades, and interests. We homeschool in the Webb house, and we plan to get Aurora and Cohen signed up with some OutSchool activities to keep them engaged in a fun way and help them explore their talents and maybe discover some new ones. OutSchool will have your kids loving to learn and having fun doing it. Head over to outschool.com/purplerocket and use code PURPLERocket to learn all about OutSchool's summer programs and save $15 on your child's first class. That's OUTSCHOOL.com/purplerocket to save $15 on your child's first class. OutSchool.com/purplerocket, code PURPLERocket. And don't forget, parents, supporting our sponsors is a great way to support this podcast. And now, back to our show. The Purple Rocket Podcast presents Space Train. Previously on Space Train, Doug and the cadets made it to the Academy of Wanderers. There they explored what was left of the school and retrieved important documents hidden in the library. As soon as they did, the Turbo Twins showed up, wanting to steal the documents for themselves. But the cadets escaped, and in the process, Lydia discovered a curious green marble. When they made it back to the space train, Leo had rigged the Turbo Twins' double copter while they were out, so he could control it remotely. Using a remote, he steered the twins far, far away. Once things had calmed down, Doug gave Lydia a golden bracelet he'd found dangling on the exit door. Lydia noticed that the bracelet held a small cup that looked to be the size of the green marble she'd found. When she snapped the marble into the bracelet, it glowed green and gave her a vision stronger than any she'd ever experienced. And now for episode 10, Brynthia's Secret. A surge of flashing images poured through Lydia's mind. Unlike most visions she'd had, hazy and short, these were crystal clear and rich in detail. She saw a massive planet, black on the surface and made almost entirely of tubes and wires. Its surface shifted and trembled, adjusting with every tremor. Then a symbol blazed to life in front of her, a flower of pure gold. In the middle of it was an inscription of a balance scale. Light flashed from the flower, waking Lydia abruptly from the vision, leaving her breathing heavily and sweating. "Are you okay?" Doug asked, entering the room. Embarrassed, Lydia wiped the sweat from her freckled cheeks. I'm fine, thanks. Doug sat down on the train car-shaped couch next to her. "You had another one, didn't you?" Lydia hesitated and then nodded. "Yep," she said quietly. "Did Goro send you to check on me?" "No, I wanted to come check on you. But he is worried. We all are. It looked like you'd passed out back there. I told Goro we should probably get you back home before it gets worse." "No," Lydia quickly said. "Seriously, I'm fine." Doug gave her a questioning look. "What do you think happened?" Lydia looked down at her bracelet and fiddled with it. I think it's this bracelet you gave me." A knot twisted in Doug's stomach. "Oh, Lydia, I'm so sorry. I had no idea it was cursed or whatever. Here, give it to me. I'll get rid of it. I'll blast it out to space or something. Man, I am officially the worst gift giver." "Doug," Lydia interrupted, "this is a good thing."
"Really?"
"Yes, really. The bracelet and this little marble thingy together are enhancing my powers. I think it's helping me see deeper into the future." There was a pause. Doug didn't know what to think. How could a random bracelet he'd found be helping her have stronger visions? Maybe she really was sick. A high fever, maybe? He used to see all sorts of crazy stuff when he had super high fevers. One thing he knew for sure, questioning her wouldn't make her like him. "What kinds of visions are you seeing?" he finally asked. Lydia shrugged. "I don't know what they mean. It's way more than I'm used to. The amount of information is overwhelming. It'll probably take me a while to figure it all out. Honestly, I don't know if I'll ever understand its meaning." She frowned. "Wait, there was one that keeps coming back to me. It's about you." Doug perked up. "You're in the Cosmic Cafe. Suddenly it detaches from the rest of the train for some reason and then drifts off into space."
"What?"
"And then it explodes."
"What?"
Lydia laughed. "I'm kidding, Captain." She emphasized Captain with a goofy smugness. "I'll tell you guys if I see anything you need to know about. Promise."
"That would be appreciated," Doug said.
There was a long silence where he couldn't think of what to say next. It was like something had fallen from the ceiling and bonked the sense out of him. What was his problem? He'd gone through every possible conversation scenario in his mind before he'd walked in here. Why forget everything now? "Oh yeah," he thought. "Just say goodbye."
"Well, I should probably go check on the engines and shovel some stuff into them."
Lydia squinted and nodded.
"You do that."
Doug turned to leave, but she caught his hand.
"Doug," she said, "thanks for checking on me. That was sweet of you."
Doug looked down at her hand holding his. His heart was pounding so loud he was sure she could hear it.
"Hey, Dudeskis."
"Oh," Dallas said, stopping in the doorway. He looked at their touching hands in surprise. Lydia quickly pulled away and tried to hide her blushing face, her pale skin failing miserably to hide the blotchiness.
"Goro's looking for you guys," Dallas added.
The three of them walked up to the cockpit together, barely saying a word to each other. When they reached the cockpit, they found Goro showing Leo something on the screen.
"There they are,"
Goro said as they entered.
"Take a seat. Lydia, how are you feeling, my dear?"
Lydia glanced at Doug before answering. "I'm totally fine, I promise." Goro's metal mustache curled upward as a smile displayed on his mouth screen.
"That's what I like to hear. Now, about that little marble of yours."
Lydia squeezed her bracelet.
"I'm going to let you hold on to it for now, until I know the best way to get rid of it. The fact that you came upon it does not appear to be a coincidence. Therefore, I will not treat it as such. Hold it close and don't lose it. If I am not mistaken, it could be a Norb.
What's that?
Dallas asked, tickling Blobby's tummy as he sat on his knees.
I'm not sure exactly, to tell you the truth, but I believe it's a rare relic, enshrouded in mystery and said to have a great deal of power. What power, I know not.
Lydia and Doug exchanged a look. Goro continued.
You should know I plan to get rid of it as soon as I feel it has served its purpose. To my next point, I was just showing Leo here that we have received a distress signal from a nearby planet. It's faint, but discernible. A strong enough ping for our Leo here to pinpoint its location. I'm sending you all down to investigate. Normally I'd give you a rundown of the world and its inhabitants and possible obstacles and whatnot, but I'm afraid you'll get none of that. Brynthia, as the world is called, is foreign to me. It doesn't show up in any of our star maps and is completely absent from our databases. So please, in the name of George Lucas, be careful.
The cadets agreed, and Goro brought the space train within Brynthia's orbit. As they approached, Lydia recognized the growing sphere out the cockpit window. An image of the black planet from her vision quickly flashed through her mind. Again, it trembled and quaked with a magnificent force. Making the vision feel all the more real, the cockpit rattled from the turbulence as they entered Brynthia's atmosphere. With a few careful turns of the joystick, Goro sent the space train slithering low over the planet's surface.
What's our oxygen reading?
Goro asked Leo. Leo punched a few buttons, bringing the data up on the screen in front of him. With a swipe, he sent the info to Goro's monitor.
Fascinating,
Goro said, looking it over.
Looks like you won't be needing your suits. The oxygen is surprisingly plentiful, and the air's free of toxins. I hate to sound like the mother of the group, but you'll want to put on a sweater. It's chilly out there. Oh, what the heck, I'll be your mother. You all have to wear your sweaters, or I'm not opening the exit bay doors.
Does somebody have an extra?
Dallas asked, his California weather-pampered body not prepared for a slight chill. Doug lent him an extra, which was way too tight on him. But Dallas seemed to be a good sport about it. Doug, on the other hand, felt like a wimp seeing his hoodie that was normally baggy on him look like doll clothes on Dallas. After squeezing into it, Dallas tossed little Blobby into the hood on his back, along with a few M&Ms to keep him busy. The exit bay doors opened, and the cadets stepped out.
Yo, that is nippy,
Doug said as the cold breeze blew into him. The air was cold and damp. Their surroundings were dimly lit by the sun's light reflecting off three nearby moons. At their feet, layers upon layers of tubes and wires made up the ground. Like jungle vines, they curled and twisted over the planet's black surface and up high walls, tall enough to guard a prison. Doug lifted his foot off a pinched tube that was squealing from the building pressure.
Anybody else feel like they were dropped into the underworld? He said. This place gives me the willies. I'm surprised we aren't getting 100 distress calls.
Leo, you still getting that signal?
Leo held up a little screen strapped to his forearm. A light blinked on it ahead of a group of dots Doug could only assume represented them.
Good, Doug said. Lead the way.
As they took their first steps, Lydia stopped. When they all looked back to see why, they saw her eyes close as she started to shake. The three boys ran up to help.
Lydia? Can you hear me?
Dallas said, catching her before she could fall. Lydia's eyes shot open.
Sorry, I'm just a little tired is all, she said, standing up straighter.
Maybe you should stay back on this one, Doug suggested.
You can get some rest.
Leo nodded in agreement.
No way, Lydia said defiantly. I'm coming. Here, I just need a break from this thing. It's weighing me down.
She took off the Nor bracelet and handed it to Leo. Right away, Doug knew that meant the visions were becoming too much for her.
If you need me to carry you part of the way, I can, Dallas offered. Just say the word.
Doug would have offered too, but he knew he'd break his back trying.
I'm good, guys. Seriously. Let's go,
Lydia insisted. The boys reluctantly agreed, and they continued. Leo put the bracelet on his wrist for safekeeping and then led the way down through the wide, tube-infested hallways. Lydia was grateful for the break. The headaches she was getting from the visions were already starting to fade. After a few turns, Leo came to a stop.
What's wrong? Doug asked.
Confused, Leo looked at his screen, then at the humongous wall in front of them, and then back down at the screen. Rotating the display on his forearm, he double-checked to see if he was turned around and reading it wrong. Perplexed, he looked at Doug and pointed to the wall and then at the screen, motioning that they were supposed to continue straight.
"What's he miming about?"
Dallas asked, growing irritated. Blobby had run out of M&Ms and was already whining at him for more from his hood pouch.
"He says we're supposed to continue straight ahead, but that's obviously not an option."
They all looked up at the tube and wire-infested wall.
"Great, now what?" Dallas said. "Blobby, do you want to go to the pocket?"
Blobby clicked and chirped stubbornly before hiding in the hood.
"We could try climbing it, I guess," Doug suggested.
Leo shook his head vigorously, pointing at the ground and making a breaking gesture with his hands.
"He's right," Dallas said. "These tubes and wires break way too easily. I've probably crushed a million since we left. And trusting those things under the weight of my bulky Greek god bod ain't happening."
"It's a maze," Lydia quietly mumbled behind them.
They turned to face her.
"No, Lydia, it's not amazing. It stinks," Dallas said.
No, it's a maze, Lydia corrected. I've seen this in my visions. Brynthia is one giant labyrinth. One way in, one way out.
Then why didn't Goro just drop us off right over the signal? Dallas asked.
Because the walls were too high and the passageways were too narrow, Doug said. That was the only drop-off point that was wide enough and looked safe.
I thought you were the captain, bro. What happened to figuring all this out before we left?
Oh, so I'm supposed to know everything about every destination? Even Goro said he didn't know it existed.
Guys, Lydia interrupted.
What?
Doug and Dallas answered.
Leo's leaving.
They looked back to see Leo heading down a new passageway. Quickly, they ran up after him. Together, they walked through a huge hallway with walls that were made entirely of mirrors. The reflecting glass gave the illusion that either side continued on into eternity. At first, it was kind of pretty, in a trippy, otherworldly kind of way. But then it became disorienting, making it hard to tell where the turns were up ahead. Doug even bonked his head into a mirror wall a couple times, thinking it was another passageway. Luckily, they had Leo. The quiet genius guided them through the confusing mirrors and into the next passageway. This one, thank goodness, looked completely normal. Just another black hallway covered in tubes and wires. Or so they thought. As soon as Leo set foot in it, the tubes and wires twitched. Then they wriggled. Another step and they started to expand, growing like fire hoses filling with water. Leo looked back at them, then pointed at himself with his thumbs, then down the corridor, and then motioned to run with his arms. The cadets nodded, getting his message. Leo and the others broke into a run. Beneath them, tubes and wires grew and shrank, making them trip and lose their balance. One tube ballooned so big, so quick, that it launched Doug 30 feet ahead. He landed hard with a grunt. A bundle of wires shrunk under Dallas's feet, making his legs cross and trip mid-sprint. They were almost to the end of the hall when one last tube grew and grew and grew out in front of them. It expanded and slanted upwards. With no sign of fear or hesitation, Leo ran up the incline full sprint. Doug and the others followed. When they reached the top of its curve, they slid down the other side. Dallas was the last one to slide off the bottom. As he got to his feet, he wobbled dizzily. Lydia nursed her knees that got scraped during one of her hard falls.
"Ugh, a simple maze wasn't enough,"
Doug said, rotating his shoulder to make sure it was still in place. Leo, the only one not complaining, led them into the next passageway. This one was even weirder than the last. Its walls were orange, wet, and slimy. Walking across it was like trying to walk on ice. With every slippery step, their feet nearly slid out from under them. At one point, both Doug's feet flew out from under him and he fell flat on his back. When he went to sit up, his hands sunk deep into the soft orange ground. Alarmed, Doug could feel a suction pull on his palms. Using all his strength, he yanked his hands free, leaving a deep handprint in the orange surface. As he carefully got to his feet, he studied the muddy material sticking to his fingers. "It's clay," he mumbled. A few more steps and he made it to the end of the passageway with the others. When the cadets faced the next hallway, their jaws dropped. This one was out of control. Huge propellers facing the stars slid across the hall on a track, their whirling blades slicing through the air. Menacing dark holes in the walls told Doug that the propellers weren't all they had to worry about.
"After you, good sir," Dallas said, motioning for Leo to take the first steps.
Leo rolled his eyes and then studied the propeller's movement, trying to find a pattern. Doug could see him counting to himself, but of course he couldn't hear anything. His lips just mouthed the words as his eyes bounced between propellers. After a minute or two of counting, his eyebrows suddenly bounced up, which Doug knew meant he'd figured it out. Motioning for them to follow directly behind him and to stay close, Leo started into the hall. They moved quickly at an angle and then stopped. Two razor-sharp propellers whizzed by right in front of them. Once they passed, the cadets moved straight a few paces and then made a sharp right and stopped. Leo held everyone in a tight hug. Four propellers crisscrossed all around them, inches from their backs. Lydia slipped, but was quickly caught by Dallas before she could fall back. The passing propeller grazed just behind her and tore a long gash in her sweater. Suddenly, they heard a "Duck!" Doug yelled. The group ducked as a cannonball whizzed over their heads and sank into the opposite wall, the ball slowly sinking into the tubes and wires. They all turned to see a huge smoking cannon sticking out of a dark hole in the wall. That was all the motivation they needed. Leo moved even quicker. They ducked and huddled as two cannonballs whistled by their heads and three propellers fanned by them. Leo was practically running now, counting his strides and abruptly stopping and ducking as cannonballs and propellers flew at them from every angle. The last cannonball ricocheted off a propeller before sinking high into the opposite wall. Finally, they reached the end of the passageway. Relieved and shocked they were still alive, the cadets caught their breath. Before they could sit and take a break, Leo was pointing excitedly at something up ahead.
"Bro, you are not human," Dallas said with his hands on his knees. "Just give us 2 seconds."
Leo ignored the request and followed his pointing finger. Reluctantly, the cadets shuffled their feet behind him until they stopped at a blinking light. As they came upon it, Leo's excitement faded. On the ground in front of them was a little plastic capsule the size of a football with a blinking light at the tip.
"Are you kidding me?" Doug said. "Where are the people in distress?"
"Leo, are you sure we're at the right place?" Lydia asked.
Leo nodded. Dallas looked at Lydia.
"Did you see any of this in your visions?"
"I didn't, and I definitely didn't see any of that back there. That would have been good to know about."
"Pretty messed up prank, if you ask me," Doug said. "Who leaves a distress signal in the middle of a booby-trapped labyrinth?"
"Lydia, what was it you said about labyrinths? One way in..."
Lydia froze and then quietly said,
"One way out."
Dallas shook his head.
"Dude, there is no way I'm going back through that stuff. No way Jose.
While Doug and Dallas complained, Leo noticed something hidden behind the distress signal. He knelt down and picked it up. It was a Rubik's Cube, the square puzzle made up of smaller, different colored squares. His eyes grew wide as he realized something.
Shh! Leo's figured something out, Lydia said, hushing the other boys.
Leo typed something frantically into his little screen. Lydia noticed the knob on his wrist was starting to glow green. It was as though the harder his mind worked, the brighter it glowed. One last tap and Leo turned the screen to face them. Doug squinted at it.
The planet is one giant spherical Rubik's Cube, he read.
The group went silent. Leo pointed to himself and nodded with a big smile.
You're going to solve it? Dallas interpreted.
Leo nodded again and tapped his head and then spread his hand out as if to say he was getting all sorts of ideas. Lydia saw the orb glowing even brighter on the bracelet.
He can do this, she said. Give him some space. He needs room to think.
Everyone stepped back as Leo got to his knees and dug through the tubes and wires under the distress beacon. When he reached the solid black panel of the surface, he spread the wiring aside to give him more space to work. With a hard yank, he pulled the panel free, exposing a complex network of dials, buttons, and switches. Leo's eyes bounced between the options, his mind planning his next several moves. Then he typed something into his screen and showed it to Doug. Goro, Doug said into his microphone.
Yes, Captain?
We're going to need you to fly the train above the planet and send us a live video feed of it.
Right away.
A minute later, a perfect image of the entire planet popped up on Leo's screen. Leo absorbed its every detail. Then, still staring at the screen, he furiously typed commands into the planet's network. As he did, the planet started to creak and groan like a waking giant. Beneath them, the ground trembled. On the screen, lines of the planet were shifting. Lydia recognized the quaking from her visions.
That's it, Leo! You're doing it!
Leo's fingers worked in a blur, every so often turning a dial or flipping a switch, making the rotating layers of planet shift from horizontal turns to vertical. Every adjustment made the planet's surface look a little more organized. The walls around them pulled away, shifting left and right, back and forth. One last turn solved the puzzle, and the wall in front of them slid away, revealing a small room. At the center of it, on the floor, was a gold symbol that glowed with a heavenly luster. On the screen, the planet now looked like a series of perfectly ordered circles that grew smaller and smaller until they encircled this one little room in front of them, at its center a glowing pillar of light.
You did it! Lydia cheered.
What is that thing?
Dallas asked. They ran over and huddled around it. It was a symbol of a golden flower with an inscription of a scale on it. Lydia recognized it from her vision.
I've seen this! Lydia said. There's something under there that we need to get out.
How do we open it? Doug asked.
Look at that balanced scale inscription there. Maybe it's a scale? Maybe if we put something that's the right weight on top of it, it'll open.
Nobody hated the idea, so they started bringing stuff over and setting it on top of the flat golden flower in the floor. They started setting down their packs, the Rubik's Cube, the distress beacon. They even took turns standing on top of it and trying various combinations of their own weight. And then Leo stopped them. Squatting down next to it, he studied the line of digits in the middle of the flower. He noticed the digits never changed from zero when they put stuff on top of it. It wasn't a scale. But what did the little scale symbol mean? He thought hard. Harder than he'd ever thought before. As he did, the orb glowed green. It hit him. Working like a mad scientist, Leo opened the video feed of the planet, took measurements from the screen, then typed in a request that Goro send him images of the surrounding moons. Again, he took measurements. Using the data he'd collected, he opened a blank digital page on the touchscreen and started scribbling notes.
Can you give us a hint, Leo? Doug asked.
Leo looked up and waved around at everything, and then gestured a heaviness with his hand.
You're calculating the weight of everything? Lydia asked.
Leo pointed to her and nodded.
The weight of the entire planet? Doug said. Leo pointed to both of them and gave another nod before crouching back down and continuing his calculations. After another minute, he was finished. He turned the screen toward them so they could see his work. To calculate the mass of a planet, you use Newton's law of universal gravitation, Doug read. Every object in the universe attracts every other object with a force directed along the line of center-to-center distance between these two objects. The force is proportional to the product of their masses and inversely proportional to the square of the separation between the two objects. Between those words was a formula. F little g equals parentheses gm little m and a parentheses over r squared. First, I determine the radius of the planet or the distance from the center to the perimeter or outer surface. Then the rest might as well have been a hodgepodge of Egyptian hieroglyphics. Leo pointed to the number at the bottom of his work and then started turning a dial under the digits to match his answer. Once the last digit clicked into place with the planet's exact mass, the golden flower hissed and detached itself from the surface. As the kids lifted the loosened flower symbol aside, their eyes widened. They peered into the flower-shaped hole and into a giant cavern full of treasure. Money of every kind was stacked in towering mounds below them, heaping hills of gold coins, mountainous stacks of bundled cash, buckets and buckets of precious gems, rubies, diamonds, and sapphires, neat piles of green cubes they'd never seen before. All of it glittered in their eyes.
"Well, what is it?"
Goro finally said over the microphone. As Lydia stared into the treasure trove, a sequence of images from her visions coupled with what she'd experienced brought her their answer. "It's their secret stash," she said. "This is where the exiles keep all their dirty money. It's all here. Their bank vault." Doug took in the enormous piles of riches. "The exiles," he said to himself. He thought about all the traps they'd survived and recognized the pattern. The clay, the propellers, the shrinking. It also explained why Goro couldn't find the planet on any of his records. He looked up at the group. "All of their money, the money that funds all the bad stuff they do, is at our fingertips." He smiled. "You guys ever heard of Robin Hood?"
Rocket Review!
Hey, Rocketeers, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Space Train. I wanted to take a second to review something that was mentioned in the episode, and that is mass. If you remember from the story, the kids are trying to figure out the mass of that planet, Brynthia. Now, there are two things that are easy to confuse: mass and weight. Put simply, mass is a measure of the amount of matter in an object, and weight is the amount of force that gravity has on an object. So what do I mean by that? Mass, being the amount of matter an object is made up of, doesn't change. It's constant. So your mass here on Earth is going to be the same if you were in space. It is the amount of matter that makes up something. But weight is completely dependent on gravity, on the gravitational pull. And your weight can vary depending on where you are in the universe. So your weight here on Earth is going to be different from your weight on the moon, because the gravity here on Earth that keeps us standing on the ground is stronger here on Earth than it is on the moon, where you see images of the astronauts kind of taking light, bouncing steps. So, while a weight of an astronaut is different on the moon than it is on the Earth, the mass, the amount of matter that makes up that astronaut, is the same, whether they're on Earth or on the moon or just floating out in space. So weight is really a form of measurement that's completely dependent on gravity.
And if you want to get really technical, scientists have defined weight using the equation weight, or W, equals mass, M, multiplied by gravitational acceleration, G. So what's amazing is if you just wanted to up and go to the moon, you'd basically be slashing your weight by 2/3. So come to think of it, that's a pretty awesome diet. I don't have to cut back on the bad things I eat. I can just become an astronaut and fly to the moon and cut my weight by 2/3. And then you'll read all about my famous weight loss program from the Oprah Book Club. Well, there you have it. Thank you guys for tuning in, and be sure to share these stories with your friends and family so they can discover this podcast. I will see you next week. This is your host, Greg Webb.